It's a large number they're going to have to come up with, and it's a very short time frame.
Health insurer Moda faces a tight deadline in Alaska to remain in the state. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, January 28th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Governor Walker names a new corrections commissioner who helped lead a critical review of the department.
When he says he's going in eyes wide open, that couldn't be truer.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
At the Salmon Project, they know that Alaskan lives are salmon lives. Join them this winter as they journey across the state and hear the stories of Alaskans whose lives are amazingly similar to yours, even if they live 2,000 miles away. Learn more at salmonlife.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Moda Health says it's pulling out of the individual health insurance market in the state. The company is one of only two insurers who sell individual health plans in Alaska. The statement from the company comes after the state of Oregon placed Moda under supervision late yesterday. In a press release, Oregon officials say they took the action because of the company's excessive operating losses. Alaska's director of insurance followed with a similar order today. But Director Lori Wing-Heyer says the company's CEO is telling her he wants to work to keep individual members in Alaska.
It has been our understanding and our commitment to Moda to work with them and to give them time to raise the capital to continue in the market if they can raise the capital. So the comments that they're exiting are as perplexing to us as they are to others that are reading them.
The statement released by Moda Vice President Jonathan Nicholas is attributed to CEO Robert Godey and says, at the direction of the insurance commissioners in both Oregon and Alaska, we have resolved to exit the individual ACA marketplace in both states. Lori Wing-Heyer estimates the company has about 10,000 individual members in Alaska and another 7,000 members on the small group market. The Division of Insurance is working to get a count of Moda members covered in large companies in the state. Wing-Heyer says the division has been aware of the financial trouble at Moda and is watching the company closely.
And we knew that they had received a significant infusion of capital in the third quarter. That had basically righted the ship, we thought, but unfortunately, it was not enough to overcome the challenges they were facing.
Moda has 6 days to prove it has enough reserve funds to continue operating in Oregon and Alaska. Wing-Heyer says she's optimistic the company can stay in business, but says it will be a challenge.
It's a large number they're going to have to come up with, and it's a very short time frame.
The open enrollment period for individual plans on healthcare.gov runs through January 31st. The state is asking people who enroll in the next few days to choose Primera Alaska plans. Primera, the only other insurer on the individual market, says it's committed to serving Alaska and ready to accept new members from Moda. The company says rates will not change. The state says the federal government has agreed to hold a special open enrollment period after January 31st to accommodate Alaska customers if needed. Utilities from Homer to Fairbanks are in discussions to overhaul the way electricity is generated and transported throughout the region. The proposals would affect power customers throughout the rail belt. As APRN's Rachel Waldholz reports, the goal is cheaper electricity and more renewable power.
Fragmented, balkanized, and often contentious. That's how a state commission described the electric utility scene in the rail belt. But that may be changing. Here's Corey Borgeson, president of Golden Valley Electric Association in Fairbanks.
Maybe it's a little bit about maturity and a little bit about different way of doing business.
In the current way of doing business, there are 6 different utilities supplying electricity to about 500,000 people between Homer and Fairbanks. In most parts of the country, a population that size would be served by 1 utility. Each company owns its little piece of the grid. Homer Electric Association supplies Homer, Anchorage Municipal Light and Power supplies parts of Anchorage, while Chugach Electric Association supplies the rest. But nobody's keeping an eye on the whole system. And that creates some problems. As Brian Hickey of Chugach Electric told the House Energy Committee on Thursday,
be much like having five or six controllers of a single airport.
Say people are using more power in Fairbanks. Ideally, the utility there would tap the next most efficient power plant in the whole system. Maybe at that moment, it's one in Anchorage. That's called economic dispatch, the ability to go to the cheapest power source available and route it to where the power is needed the most. It can save ratepayers a chunk of money, but right now, it's not possible. So utilities are exploring creating a single operator for the whole region.
We want a system operator that is impartial and independent, and I can't emphasize that enough.
That's Chris Rose, the head of REAP, the Renewable Energy Alaska Project. The current system makes it hard for independent companies to access the grid, especially renewable energy suppliers. When Cook Inlet Region Incorporated wanted to expand its Fire Island Wind project, Golden Valley Electric in Fairbanks was interested in buying. But between Cook Inlet and Fairbanks are three other utilities, and each of them charge a fee.
There was a willing buyer and a willing seller, but the transmission tariffs really killed the deal.
A single system operator could create a one-stop shop for independent producers who want to access the grid. Meanwhile, to make all this work, the entire system needs nearly $1 billion in upgrades, money that no utility can raise alone. In the past, the funds might have come from the state, but that's no longer likely. So utilities are also considering bringing in an outside transmission company to build and maintain lines. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska, which oversees utilities, has ordered the companies to try to resolve the issues voluntarily. In an update to lawmakers on Thursday, Golden Valley's Borgeson said it's going well.
I don't think we're talking years. I think we're talking months, maybe 18 months.
The next progress report is due by the end of the month. From the Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage.
The number of dead common murres showing up on Alaska's beaches keeps growing. The amount of dead birds the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has retrieved is beyond the 22,000 collected when the Exxon Valdez went aground in Prince William Sound. Heather Renner with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says the die-off is already one of the largest in history, and unlike when the tanker went aground, no one has gone out to remote beaches to look for dead seabirds.
Exactly the same number is purely a coincidence. Our number is changing every day as people call in more reports. But certainly there was a lot of effort put into searching beaches back then, and now people are just calling in and telling us about them, and we haven't gotten the chance to look at much of the remote coastline.
Renner told attendees at the Alaska Marine Science Symposium that dead murres started showing up on beaches last summer. They were spread over a large area and didn't get as much attention until thousands started showing up on beaches in January.
It was 10 times what it normally is, but you still had to walk a long way before you found a carcass. And then all of a sudden, since Christmas, you can't walk a beach without finding murres everywhere. You see them on the side of the road. You see them along the Seward Highway here in Anchorage. They're foraging in Cook Inlet, which they never do. But there's dead murres on the ground everywhere, and it's hard not to notice them.
The reason for the dead birds is still a mystery. Renner says because the deaths began last summer and are still continuing, that indicates it might be the result of a change in the food web.
I think it rules out short-term acute events like immediate poisoning events. I think it suggests something more related to the food web structure. But there are a lot of hypotheses that, and certainly these things all contribute to each other. So at a time when you have a big storm, you have a big pulse of numbers because the birds are stressed and weakened already.
Researchers have now examined more than 100 of the birds and have seen no sign of toxins in their stomach contents. But Renner says the birds are so starved, there is hardly anything in their stomachs to analyze. Scientists say whether this large die-off will have a major impact on murre populations will take years to determine. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a homeless man in Juneau gets a haircut at a Project Homeless Connect event.
It's rough right now, so this is really, it's really good timing for me. I really do appreciate it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Two suspicious deaths in Anchorage have local police puzzled. APD was investigating a body that was found at the city's Point Warrens off early this morning when they found a second person nearby who was critically wounded. That person has since died in an Anchorage hospital. Police spokeswoman Anita Schell is saying little about the incident, except that someone called about the first body around 8:30 this morning. The second victim was located almost an hour later. Schell, in a press release, says the victims are a male and a female, and that police are in the process of notifying next of kin. The cause of death has not been released for either victim. Last year, Dean Williams found many problems with the State Department of Corrections that contributed to the deaths of dozens in Alaska's prisons and jails. Now he will be in a position to do something about it. Governor Bill Walker today nominated Williams to be Corrections Commissioner. Williams expressed an interest in changing how the department handles people who are detained when they're severely intoxicated.
Putting high-risk individuals who are intoxicated by alcohol or drugs, who have committed no crime, in a jail cell with other people in the same condition is not acceptable. And I'm going to work to get there. We do need other alternatives, and so it's on the radar.
In August, Walker asked Williams and former FBI agent Joe Hanlon to conduct a review of the department after several high-profile inmate deaths. Williams and Hanlon found problems including inconsistent investigations, a lack of adherence to rules by officers, and the use of solitary confinement for minor infractions. The report recommended investigations of deaths that take place in corrections facilities be handled through an external review. Williams worked in the juvenile justice system for more than 30 years. He has served as a special assistant to Walker since July. Walker says the fact that Williams wrote a report critical of the department he will now lead is not a problem.
He's the best person for this to take on this task, and so I don't see a conflict on that. Actually, quite honestly, I see in some respects a bit of a benefit as far as when he says he's going in eyes wide open. That couldn't be truer.
Former Corrections Commissioner Ron Taylor resigned after the report was issued. Both Walker and Williams praised the service of Interim Commissioner Walt Monaghan, who also had applied for the permanent job. Officials are gathering in Anchorage for a two-day conference on synthetic cannabinoids. According to new figures from the city's fire department, first responders report spice-related emergencies remain steady at about 10%. And as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, the city is pulling together a broad spectrum of experts to develop long-term strategies.
Nearly 100 people from law enforcement, public health, social services, and representatives from Alaska's two senators are camped out in a conference room teaching each other about spice. It's part of a push by the Anchorage Police Department and partner groups to better coordinate a response to what officials have characterized as a health crisis. Though the explosion in spice-related emergency calls has diminished from a dramatic peak in October, Anchorage has seen more than 800 calls for service in the last 6 months. The problem is sticking around. APD Sergeant Jack Carson says the drug is part of a new normal on the streets of Anchorage.
I don't see in any way that this drug is going away anytime soon. We got to learn how to live with it, how to regulate it, and how to deal with it as a community. And that is not just going to be done by the Anchorage Police Department. It's got to be done by the whole community.
Carson spent an hour running conference attendees through the alarming stats on spice, as well as the complex legal and financial background that make it a distinct drug for law enforcement's efforts. But the biggest new development in the city's spice woes is the partnership between law enforcement and public health officials, who often have very different perspectives on drug and addiction issues. Dr. Michael Cooper is with the state's Section of Epidemiology and made the case for collaboration with a slide that read, "An emergency is a bad time to start exchanging business cards."
You don't want to start meeting your partners in the field during in the midst of a crisis.
As far as concrete policy solutions, though, few new options have emerged. Several months ago, the Anchorage Assembly passed legislation criminalizing the sale and manufacture of synthetic cannabinoids, which gives law enforcement new investigative powers to build criminal cases. Officials within the mayor's administration, however, say a comprehensive solution will need to involve housing, services, and treatment for addiction issues. Mayor Ethan Berkowitz told The Room that when it comes to policy recommendations, he's all ears.
If you tell me what to do, I will go do it.
The Synthetic Cannabinoids Working Group Conference lasts through Friday afternoon. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska Now has a more localized way of looking at homelessness data. Instead of gathering information that reflects the state as a whole, some municipalities can see their own data that gets reported to the feds. That could mean more funding for housing in some communities. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins went to Juneau's Project Homeless Connect event, where people were getting help in a number of ways.
John Ross hasn't had a haircut in a while. His hair is black with a wisp of gray feathering from the temples. He says he wants something polished, just nothing high and tight.
I was in the service. I've had everything cut off. I don't want that again.
He's waiting with three other people at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. A salon called Sheer Design is volunteering staff for the day. And so far, they've been busy nonstop. Ross has been sleeping at the Glory Hole on and off for about 4 years. In the summer, he works at Taku Smokeries.
As soon as they open up the campground, I'll go back there and I'll be going back and forth to Taku, working and having a place to stay.
He says he works the most during salmon season, even doing double shifts. But in the winter, when there's little seafood coming in, he goes back to being unemployed.
It's rough right now, so this is really, it's really good timing for me. I really do appreciate it. That's one reason I like to give something in appreciation of what they're doing for me.
He gives away tiny dream catchers, the kind you can hang on a rearview mirror. He made one last year for the woman who cut his hair. At that point, he hadn't had a cut in 7 months.
And I was really shaggy, so I really appreciated it at the time. It was a whole different person that came out of here, and I was looking for work. And a couple of weeks later, I did get some work, and it's kind of nice to look good before and while you're looking.
Just across the parking lot, more than 200 people experiencing homelessness filtered through the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Booths line the walls of the old gymnasium. You can sign up for Medicaid, have your blood pressure taken, or pick up a pair of socks or gloves. But first, you have to talk to Jackie Triplett, or one of the other volunteers, to take a survey.
Gender, race, household type, whether it's an adult or adult with children.
There are also some very personal questions on it, like have you been a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault?
And some people want to talk more and discuss things, which is fine. It's nice to meet these people and understand their issues. I think, you know, more people would understand what's happening to these people if they came and volunteered to do this.
This is Triplett's second year volunteering to do this. Project Homeless Connect has been going on for 5. Triplett says when people sit down with her, she tries to explain why the survey is important.
We're really collecting data so that we know how the community can help our homeless population.
Every year across the United States, that data gets collected. And important policy and funding decisions are made by analyzing it.
This year, we're working with our administrator to make sure that we break it down by communities.
Scott Chambor is on the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. He says for many years, the state complied with just the federal requirements. Alaska was broken down into 2 categories, Anchorage and the rest of the state. Now communities doing the survey can have access to that data, which could help with getting funding for housing, especially permanent supportive housing.
It's a game changer because when you're trying to plan and advocate for resources, you know, the first question is, well, what do you have? It's definitely giving communities a tool to address their circumstances.
When did you go into cutting hair? Was it right after the Army?
Oh, no. I've been cutting hair since like 87.
John Ross is finishing up his haircut. He's probably had about an inch cut off, and it looks great. Most of the feathery white has been snipped away. Before he leaves, he hands the barber a gift, the small dream catcher.
Oh, wow. Thanks for the haircut. Right on. Thank you.
And heads to the bathroom to check out his new look.
It's perfect. The length, everything. I feel better about going. Even though I know I got the job at Taku, it's good to look good when you start a job. So I'm happy.
Down the line, he hopes to qualify for other jobs with the vocational training he learned about at today's event. The results of the survey should be completed sometime in May. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, file your 2016 PFD application today. 2, receive a confirmation of filing. And 3, sign electronically with your secure My Alaska account. Visit pfd.alaska.gov for more information. And remember, the deadline to apply is Thursday, March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
North Slope officials have called for a special election to recall Mayor Charlotte Brower after residents successfully gathered enough signatures on a petition. The announcement was made Tuesday at a North Slope Borough Assembly meeting. The effort to recall Brower began after allegations that she misused borough funds. She has been accused of using public money to send her grandchildren to a basketball camp in California and to purchase cakes from her daughter. Petitioners started gathering signatures in November and have collected more than the 492 needed for the recall. According to the borough clerk's office, the special election will be held April 5th. Brower said in a statement that she is looking forward to discussions with the community on the important issues facing the borough. State leaders have been grappling with the bleak chore of reining in deficit spending, but tonight there is cause for celebration in Juneau. The annual Governor's Awards for the Arts and Humanities takes place tonight in the capital city. Awards will be given to outstanding Alaskans for their work in advancing art and humanities. One of tonight's recipients is Cyrano's Theater Company in Anchorage. The small theater will receive the award for distinguished service to the humanities. Sandy Harper, the longtime owner of Cyrano's, will accept the award in Juneau this evening. Harper and her late husband Jerry opened Cyrano's Off-Center Playhouse in 1992.
Because of Jerry's gifts, the standards were always extraordinarily high, and we were very eclectic in our choices. Jerry did a lot of plays that were classics or that were famous at the time he was coming of age. Gradually, we also did musicals and also produced a lot of original work. Dick Rushman is actually our resident playwright, and we have commissioned him to do a new play this year, 2016, called The Ticket, and it's an imaginary meeting between Jay Hammond and Wally Hickok. It's going to be amazing.
What do you think it means to be able to spend 23 years engaged in something that you clearly have so much passion for? What has that meant for your life?
It meant that it's zoomed by pretty darn fast, and I am grateful for the joyride that it's been. I know how fortunate I am to have been involved in the kind of work that does give you pleasure, and you want to wake up in the morning, and it's a constant creative challenge, and it's fun. And I was so lucky that, you know, Jerry was with us so long. Bill Tobin wrote the most beautiful eulogy for him when he passed, that Jerry was probably the greatest actor that ever graced the stages of Anchorage or Alaska. And, of course, he was also a director. We did tape some of the shows. So I'm grateful that they're there because I can still see Jerry perform. I have... Like, for example, he was Lady Bracknell in The Importance of Being Earnest, which was extraordinary. And I remember somebody saying, "Who's that new actress in town?" Because he did such a good job and fooled everybody.
Why is it important to have small community theaters such as Cyrano's? What does that fulfill for the community and for artists?
First of all, it engages the community, and because one of our goals was to tell the stories to reflect the demographics, be very inclusive of Anchorage. In addition to that, Cyrano's Theater happens to be a small, intimate black box theater, and that gives it real charm, real power, real virtual reality. And the actors, of course, have to be extremely honest in their work. And when you come to Cyrano's, it's also the opportunity for all the designers. When you go, each set is totally different than the others. And I find that exciting as well. And it also nourishes the talent of set designers, costume designers, visual painters, actors, directors, sound people, stage managers. It takes a lot of people to create the magic of theater.
Sandy Harper is the owner of Cyrano's Theater Company in Anchorage. She picked the plays and directors for the 2016 season, but is passing the torch to Teresa Pond, who is the new producing artistic director. Saturday was the grand opening of Hearth Artisan Pizzas in Anchorage, a pizzeria owned by John Campobello. Campobello is also the owner of the Middleway Cafe, located right next door. APRN intern Wesley Early has more.
While pizzerias may seem plentiful in the Anchorage area, Campobello thinks his traditional style pizza will set itself apart.
Hearth Artisan Pizza is a traditional style pizza restaurant. Everything is handcrafted, house-made.
Campobello says during a short visit to Portland, he was inspired by a local pizzeria to establish one of his own back home in Anchorage.
The feeling of the place was just one of warmth and of a loved neighborhood spot. You know, I just loved how comfortable and warm and light and fresh everything was in that place. And I thought, wow, that's just a wonderful little shop, and I would love to do something like that in Anchorage.
The wood tables and bar at Hearth are made from repurposed alder wood. Eclectic style ceramic lamps hang from the ceiling. Campobello says they're locally crafted. Campobello emphasizes authenticity and local ingredients in his food preparation and presentation.
We cook our pizzas in a wood oven, and we burn alder wood that is gathered down in the Kenai Peninsula for us. We have an organic dough and organic tomato sauce, and we really pride ourselves on using local fresh and organic ingredients wherever possible.
Campobello isn't the only person excited and optimistic about Hearth. Laura Moscatello is a frequent customer at Middleway Cafe, and although she didn't attend the grand opening, she plans on dining at Hearth very soon.
When I found out it was pizza, I was kind of surprised because you have a lot of competition here, so it's interesting to see that it's pizza, but they have a good product, so I know that they stand by that. And actually, I noticed that it opened just this weekend, but so I haven't been there yet, but I'm very excited.
Hearth Artisan Pizza is open from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Sundays and Tuesday through Fridays, and from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Saturdays. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz and Johanna Urick, Ellen Lockyer, Zachariah Hughes, and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the 2016 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. The last day to sign up during open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace is Sunday, January 31st. Depending on your income and household size, you may qualify for savings. Be informed. Call 1-844-PLANS-AK. That's 1-844-752-6725 to find local assistance in your area. More information online at getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Primary Care Association. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, file your 2016 PFD application today. 2, receive a confirmation of filing. And 3, sign electronically with your secure My Alaska account. Visit pfd.alaska.gov for more information. And remember, the deadline to apply is Thursday, March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.